हरिः
ॐ सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सहवीर्यंकरवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 35, continuing from this morning's sentence. Okay. Oh, we didn't even finish that sentence, right? We only got up to he was a great politician.
Yeah.
Okay. He knew how to act according to the time and situation. With sweet words, because the time and situation means you're having the aspects that Dharma is establishing, the artist establishing, Niti's establishing. It's just a matter of how big of a perspective you're looking at it. Right? With sweet words, he began to pacify his nephews, whose names were Shakuni, Sambara, Drishti, Bhuta, Shantapana, Vrika, Kalanabha, Mahanabha, Harish Mashru, and Utkacha. He also consoled their mother and sister-in-law, Rushabhanu, as well as his own mother, Diti. He spoke to them all as follows. Hiranyakashipu said, "My dear mother, sister-in-law, and nephews, you should not lament for the death of a great hero, for a hero's death in front of his enemy is glorious and desirable. My dear mother, in a restaurant or place for drinking cold water, many travelers are brought together, and after drinking water, they continue to their respective destinations. Similarly, living entities join together in a family, and later, as a result of their own actions, they are led apart to their destinations." 7 through 21, Srila Prabhupada comments. All living entities act exactly according to the directions of Prakriti, material nature, because in the material world, we are fully under a higher control. All the living entities in this material world have come here only because they wanted to be equal to Krishna in enjoyment and have thus been sent here to be conditioned by material nature in different degrees. In the material world, a so-called family is a combination of several persons in one home to fulfill the terms of their imprisonment. As criminal prisoners scatter as soon as their terms are over and they are released, all of us who have temporarily assembled as family members will continue to our respective destinations. Unique way to look at it. So, in other words, what we call a family technically are cellmates, according to this definition. Okay. Right. So, people come to that place for a purpose. Right. They come there to drink their water, to rest, a little bit like that. So, the living entities are in the material world. They have particular desires, particular feelings and attachments and needs. So they're put together with others who have a similar kind of thing. That's why they relate to each other as a family. Does that make sense? So sometimes you see is that there's more things in common, so it's a closer family. Sometimes you see it's not. But in any way, the thing works in that method. Does that make sense? And so then after having, drunk their water and gone to the bathroom and bought some chips or whatever they're doing, then they move on to the next place. They'll go on to the next life, the next place to drink water. So the next family. That's why it just keeps changing and changing. Does that make sense? So that's why also in the Vedic system that it's very important to understand duties. So that since it's always changing like that, but the common thing is that the duties are being performed properly. Understanding that, then one will act in a proper way. Yes.
It appears that the difficulty in establishing long-lasting relationship between devotees is that, connecting it to the morning class, is that we act on the level of niti,
yes,
and artha, mm-hmm, and then there's a gap, and there's pure devotional service. And, you know, in the temple room, yeah, we look, everybody is a pure devotee.
Right.
I mean, it is there.
Yeah. I mean, why are they there?
Yeah. Right? But then we come, like, it's here, you know, home or whatever situation, mm-hmm, you know, comfort mm-hmm zone, mm-hmm, and then we are like this. Mm-hmm. And then this gap is, we have to fill it with something, but
yeah,
the natural would be Dharma,
yes,
but he isn't there.
Yeah, so we fill it with pranamoy, you know, the modern things, whatever the modern things are in that. So basically, individuals, depending upon their nature, will tend to more or less go to whatever was their position before, whatever they would identify as their social position. That would be the tendency. You know, and then how much they fill that in with other things. But that will, you know, create an environment in which they have an identity, they can relate to the others, they can deal. So that's why the Vedas give the Dharma, because then you have a common thing. The problem with pranamoya, it's not common.
You know, it's localized.
It's localized, yes. It's just like India's, you know, it's within one, you know, this, what do you call it? The subcontinent, right? Mm-hmm. The Indian subcontinent. If we take, you know, over to, you know, how far it went to the west and then to the east, and, you know, up into Nepal and all these places around there, the peoples in all these places are totally different. They look totally different. The languages are different. And, you know, so many things. But the interesting thing is, no matter where you go, the common culture will be the same. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's the advantage of it. So that, by filling that position, then makes something that works very, very well. So it accommodates the general, but at the same time, it also accommodates the very individual uniqueness of it. You know? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, so Krishna's eating like a wide variety of things. So within that, then there's, he eats rice, he eats chapatis. So some only eat rice, some only eat chapatis, some, you know, eat both. You know, so it works. There's, you know, dry things, there's wet things. So depending where it is, then they focus more on one or the other. You know, but he, you know, he's that whole range. So for him, then it's a natural thing. But then for us, we'll prefer, you know, it's just like we go to the feast, we prefer certain things. You know, someone likes to eat all the pakoras, someone likes to pick all the paneer out of the sabji, you know, like this. So everybody has what they like to do. But all of it's part of the, you know, the offering for Krishna. So that's the nice thing about the Vedic system, is it accommodates everybody. But because it's accommodating from the mode of goodness, that's what we're not used to. See, the other ages, it worked very easy because goodness was more prominent. But in Kali Yuga, because the ignorance is so prominent, people can't see it. So they'll consider the Vedic culture to be an inferior thing. You know, by applying their own modern value systems and then trying to impose that onto the Vedic system without a proper understanding. So they'll consider it something inferior. Right? Which is also in line with the Western conditioning. Right? Means any conditioning, one always will think one's better. The Bengalis will naturally think they're better than the Biharis, who think they're better than the UP Wallis. You know, everybody thinks they're like that. But at the same time, it's not that they necessarily deal badly with them. They just prefer being with their, you know, birds of a feather flock together. It's not that they necessarily harass. They just, you know. And so then, how do you say? But somehow or another, as the modes drop, the mode of goodness goes, where you just have the passion, ignorance, then the false ego is so much greater. So somebody who doesn't do things the way we do, you know, we're doing it because of specific purposes. Therefore, the other is not doing it, they must be something less intelligent or lower. And therefore, then, naturally, you want to control, you want to remove that culture, establish your own, and everything like that. So the authority becomes, your culture becomes the authority. So if we're not trained in this element of mode of goodness, or, you know, having a wider perspective or a more tolerant perspective, the general thing is we'll want to
not understanding the Vedic, want to remove that and replace it with our own. You know, that's just how the West works. You know, it's how the West was won, like that. So, it's not such a good, you know, perspective, because it doesn't accommodate much. It really doesn't accommodate much. So, how do you say? Because if you take it, okay, let's say we're, you know, going to follow the, you know, how you say, universally applicable, you know, Western polity that matches everybody at all times, all places, and all circumstances, right? Because we're just being practical, right? Isn't it? Yeah, of course. But now, if you look at it, then let's say you take, you know, north of the Rio Grande and south of, I think it's the 49th parallel, then that pertains, you know, between the Atlantic and Pacific, you know, just giving a very general kind of, like that. What do they think of anyone south of the border? You know, there's something wrong, they don't have that drive, they're, you know, they're like this, they're too sentimental. What about the guys north of the border? You know, they're just kind of like, I don't know, Americans that you took the steam out of them or something, you know, like that. You know, something. They don't have that same drive. They're too pleasant. They're too nice to be, you know, like that. And then Europeans have their quirks and everything like that. And of course, Asians are definitely got problems. And then Africans, and then like that. You know, it's okay. You know, the Aussies are okay. They're a bit weird. They talk funny, but you know, hey, we can handle them. You know, we can handle the English. But everybody else, unless you've grown up in a more eclectic background, then they're all kind of weird. So, therefore, if you look at it really bluntly, there is no such thing as this universal culture and it's good for everyone over from the West. You know, it doesn't work. Because wherever you are, somebody from somewhere else, so if the Europeans are saying this, they won't like things the way the Americans do. Americans don't like how anybody else does. You know what I'm saying? So it's not going to work. So everyone's going to use the common thing, but actually they're saying it's the West. No, it's pranamoya. And it's atheistic pranamoya, because it's against the Vedic version. So we'll only, in other words, we'll only support the Vedic version if it's in line with something that's there. You know what I'm saying? Like the Christian value of, you know, only having one partner, right? So then the other parts of the world that allow more, then that's weird. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, if there's something that Veda says, okay, you shouldn't steal, okay, we'll buy that one, because, you know, it's there in the Ten Commandments, you know, like that. So, and, you know, you don't want to take it too far, because it's like, you know, who has a donkey, right? You know, so if they have donkeys, then that's weird, right? You know? You know, if it says don't steal your neighbor's Ford, okay, that makes sense. You know, so the difficulty comes is, even though it's discussed as if it's so naturally universal, it's not universal at all. Because as we mentioned before this morning, even you take, you know, within that general confines that I mentioned, people in there, they don't get along with each other. The mentalities are so different. It's designed like that. It's set up as 50 actually autonomous states. And there's only a few common laws, maybe more now. There's only some common laws that they all agree to. Therefore, they're part of the... But each state can have its own laws. You know, one law has a thing, the next state, it's not there. You know, so it's very unique like that. So... this whole idea is that this is the universal. Some, you know, certain platitudes there, but those platitudes are already in the Vedas. They're already there. That's why they're useful as platitudes. So that's the difficulty, is that they'll fall back on something like you're saying that'll drop down to passion and ignorance. And so that gap between pure goodness, the natural step back, is goodness. In other words, from goodness, you're following the recommended activities to do, but you may have some other motives. Right? So there's passion, or you may not understand, some ignorance. But at least you're doing what's correct. then by understanding the philosophy and by devotional service, then we're able to act in the pure state where it's just for Krishna. But nothing changes. You know, just like we were saying, the lifestyle of a Vaishnava Smarta won't really be any different than ours. Basically, most all who follow more strictly the Vedic standard, their lifestyle is not any different than ours. They all get up early, they all take their bath, they all go to do some kind of puja or worship or something like that. They all then only after breakfast start their work like this, and then in the evening they come back, their bath or this, they do other pujas and all these things like that. So there's no real difference. So from there to be able to practice pure goodness would be very easy. What's lacking is the pure goodness. They have the goodness, but it's actually not enough. It's the mundane. Pure goodness would actually bring them to that transcendental platform. So for those outside the Vedic culture, then there's a gap there because you don't have that lifestyle. And so it's the lifestyle is below that. So then when one introduces the lifestyle and goodness to get to pure goodness, then it seems like, no, that's not there. And since it's not about the goodness, it'll be left for the pure goodness, the mistake is making we don't have to follow all that. But what's left is not the activity. What's left is the mentality. Just like it's one of the biggest misunderstandings, the difference between Vaidhi Bhakti and Rag Bhakti. Because they're both sadhana. Externally, they'll look exactly the same. If they don't look exactly the same, something's wrong. You know, but there's this idea, no, rag is a whole different set of rules, and prema is a different set of activities than that. But they're the same thing. You know, you make a chance in Mother Jashoda's kitchen, it's going to be exactly the same technique as you do here. It's not that it's something different. You know, just there everything, you know, talks, but here nothing does, but you know. You know, here you have to figure it out. It's ready. There, they'll tell you that we're ready. So, but nothing changes. So that's the because we're used to that change because of the impersonalism. Because from impersonalism, I do these activities because I'm attached. Now, if I'm a jnani, I'm detached. What does that mean? I give up all those activities. That's what makes me spiritual. That's why the Mayavadis in Varanasi couldn't understand Lord Chaitanya. Because singing, dancing, these are all things attached people do. How is a spiritualist doing them? Because they as impersonalists and that, you know, they're, you know, dry as a bone. And they can't understand why would Lord Chaitanya not be like that. You know? Does that make sense? So that's what Prabhupada's doing, is giving us that gap, showing us that gap. But, you know, starting from the simplest things, you take the temple program and the dealings how devotees will do and the concepts in there, and then expanding from there. So the idea is that you have the temple program, because it's an ashram, from there it should expand into the other aspects of the ashram. Like that. And then from there you can expand over into occupation. You know, just like you do service, you know, distribute books or do puja or cook for the deities or clean or whatever in the temple. It's just the same principle goes out into, you might have some kind of job or business or something outside. So it's supposed to expect, but what happens is if we think it's something different, then we'll say, oh, this is not practical, we can't do that. So when they go do something else, the mentality changes. Then it's lost, you know. So the mentality goes down. It goes from the proper spiritual down to, you know, pranamoya and a good day, you know. Because most people don't even understand how to talk pranamoya either. Because, you know, it has to be based on good qualities and, you know, fraternity, equity, liberty, you know. When nowadays it's more just about I want this and that's what it goes. They may try to do it in a nicer way. You know, but it's not that developed. So that makes the difficulties then going from that lifestyle that's based on passion and ignorance and suddenly going to the temple where it's pure goodness. and then walking out the door and again back down to passion and ignorance, and then up to pure goodness. So the idea is it should be that if you fall down from pure goodness, you fall to goodness. Like I told you the story about Bhakti Chumash. So that's the whole idea, is that they'll just drop down to there. There won't be any difference. You know, what's all that's dropped is the consciousness. But the activity is the same. But because we identify with the activity, that's where the problem comes. So then you're doing this one set of activities, then this other set of activities. And then, so therefore, since everyone can't live in the temple, therefore it's something totally different. Rather than, no, it's the same thing. You're just doing it in your house. Like that. It accommodates the house. You know, so that's different. You know, just like you're cooking in the deity kitchen and you're cooking in the devotee kitchen or in the food distribution kitchen, then the principle of cooking remains the same, and the consciousness you're cooking for Krishna. But the pots and pans and ingredients, that may change greatly. You know, I doubt that, you know, when you're doing khichdi for, you know, 10,000 people, that they're going to be using saffron. You know, like that, you know, or they're not going to be taking the tomatoes and taking off the skin and the seeds, and, you know. So, you know, there's a good chance there won't be any tomatoes. Yeah, so. You know, or if they do, it comes in a can. Right? Yeah. Like that. Yeah, you know, so, but the principle of cooking and the consciousness that's there, that remains the same. So that's the thing, is that the cooking is that mode of goodness part. The principles of cooking, how it works. Then the consciousness of doing for Krishna, that's the pure goodness. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty. Is that it goes back and forth too far. You know, it's like cooking really nice for the deities in the temple, then going home and, you know, eating, you know, ramen noodles, you know. You know, get the little box of, you know, thing, pour the hot water in and hari bowl. You know, it's just, it's too much of a... That's the difficulty. So that's why Prabhupada talks so much about the culture. So the devotees will be inspired and try to apply, because everybody can apply them. You can say, oh, it doesn't work here. But, you know, take any country of the world outside of India, and Indians are living there, and they're living so many aspects of them. The people who live in Bombay, they live the same lifestyle they live in Europe. Like that. You know, the Africans, they'll do the same. The Asians will do the same. You know, the Latinas would do the same. So this whole idea is, no, in this place you can only live like that. It's a fallacy. You know, your neighbor is not. You know, we had one kid in the school that he came as an adult, but he was talking, you know, one day we were just talking about this, that, and his background. And since he was 8, he ate in the neighbor's house. Because he somehow or another was convinced being vegetarian was... you know, proper. So his neighbors were Punjabis. You know, he's in England, you know, but he ate every day in his neighbor's house. So unless there was something vegetarian happening in his house, he ate at the neighbor's house. Like that, you know, it's basically from 8 until he, you know, joined the movement. You know, stuff like that. So, you know, this whole idea is that, no, it can't be done here. It's like, you know, that's the whole thing. Oh, it can't be done because of all these things. But then the fun part is where do all these vegetables come from? You know what I'm saying? The concept of vegetables, they're all coming from other cultures. You know, like that. So that's the difficulty then comes, is having not been exposed to that, or had any association to gain that understanding, then it seemed that it's not practical. It's not doable. Oh yeah, you could do that 100 years ago. You can't do that now. Millions of people do it. Everything that Prabhupada talks about in his books, people are doing it today, and not just one or two. You know, huge amounts are doing it. You know, it's getting less and less as time goes, only because people say, oh, it can't be done. You know, like I always find it so amusing. We're here in Mayapur. Oh, we can't do these things, you know, because everybody else, you know, because the kids are exposed to this, you know, all this Western cultural things and like that. And I said, and who are they exposed to? the local villagers in Taranpur, then they have, you know, video game rooms and all that, and that's exposing their kids. That the kids really just want to be Krishna conscious and, you know, chant their rounds, but then these local Bengali kids drag them in there and force them to play video games, so then they get an attachment to that, then they go home and tell their parents, I want to play video games. Right? Isn't that how it works? Yeah. So we're here in our own community and then complaining about the Western community that's, you know, tens of thousands of miles away. You know, so that's the fun part. So that's the thing is, no, if you want to do it, it can be done. But it's not that it's not going to be difficult. So that's why Prabhupada is recommending, and then people commit to it. So now, even though devotees are more, a little bit more refined, a little more sensitive, a little bit more these things, but then the problem is then it's also lost the that refinement in Krishna consciousness. Not that individuals haven't progressed, but as a general community, it's not the prominent thing. You know? It's like I remember our temple was Panchatattva picture temple, you know, which most temples were. But so for the Sunday program, one of the grihastas, they brought their installed Radha Krishna deities to the temple, and then for the Sunday program, then all the offerings are made to them and everything, you know, like that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So that's the problem. Yes?
I was just thinking, isn't the idea to make your home like Krishna's home, like your home a temple?
Yes, yes.
And so if your home is a temple, then you would follow as closely as possible temple standards and try and maintain that consciousness.
Yes.
So there wouldn't be so much of a difference.
No. So that's the idea. If one's trained and one, as much as one can, as practical one does. That's the idea. But the point is who's going to train? Because that means the temple should be training.
Yeah.
Yes, but that's not the principle being used. You know, because you don't want to bother, you don't want to be fanatic, you don't want to this, that, you know, it's so many things. Whatever it is. But the point is, people want to do, they can do nicely. Like that. So it's not that it's not possible. I remember, I think it was in New York, went to somebody's house. The guy's got more deities than most temples. You know? And they're really well situated. I don't know what they are, but it's like, you go to the place in the morning, you think you walked into a South Indian place, you know, with all the dotis and this and the deity worship, what's going on like that. And the day they go out, I don't know what they are, lawyers or something like that, you know. So, you know, they're doing fine. So this idea is, no, it can't be done, and all the, that's not very important. Is that okay? So that's why Prabhupada's recommending the Vedic culture. Lord Chaitanya is recommending it. It's not that that is what makes Krishna consciousness, but it just makes it so much easier. You know, it's like the corner store or something. It's so much easier just to pop out and go to the corner and get something than have to get in your car and drive all the other side of town and drive all the way back. So that's the whole idea, is that you can just from here, whatever your lifestyle is, just... it's just you're reminded to do your lifestyle in a pure fashion, rather than you go to the temple and you actually have to live a different lifestyle. That's the idea. It just makes it easier, like that. So that's why it's recommended. So if one understands that, then that goes nice, and you try to get it as close as works for you, like that. So some people are more technical, some people be less. But it's about keeping it, you know, simple and all that, so it works nicely for Krishna consciousness. Yes.
Is this how devotees are brahminical in ashram, because they take that home, like it's all.
Yes, no, it's the same lifestyle. Because it's good. See, because brahminical means it's about understanding Brahman. So the whole Vedic culture is about how to situate yourself, you know, in Brahman, right? So whether it means that you understand everything's connect is all Brahman, or you understand the super soul, or you understand Bhagavan, but it's all in the same level of transcendence. Does that make sense? So of that, the easiest is Bhagavan. You understand the person, the other two make sense. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, yeah. So. Okay. Although Hiranyakashipu was a demon, he had Vedic knowledge and understanding. Thus, the advice given to his family members, his sister-in-law, mother, and nephews, was quite sound. The demons are considered highly elevated in knowledge. But because they do not use their good intelligence for the service of the Lord, they are called demons. So that's the whole point. That's what, remember, because I mentioned that in the mode of passion, where the demons in the mode of ignorance were yakshasas and like this. Right? Did I say rakshasa?
Yakshasa.
I was about to say yakshasa, and then I said that, and then it didn't come out because it's already been said. Yakshasa. Okay. Yes. Okay.
Huh? It's all inclusive.
Yes, all inclusive. The yakshasadis. Yes. Okay. So the point is they're considered highly elevated in knowledge. So this idea is, no, I have more knowledge, or more developed, more like that. The demons are already like that. That's what makes the difference. So you can say in another case, you have the daityas and the danavas. So in a general category, the daityas are the demons, and the danavas would be considered that next group down. They're more in ignorance. Well, the daityas are more in passion. So passion means you're following the lifestyle of goodness, but for your own material motives. You're not doing because you're supposed to, or for elevating purposes. That's why they're called demons. Right? So if you're following the activities of goodness to because that's the law of the Lord, that's considered proper and pious. If you're just doing because you're supposed to and all that, okay, you'll maintain it this lifetime, but next lifetime you'll probably drop down to this demoniac platform. Because then you're just doing it for the benefits you get. So that makes sense. So if someone's in the mode of passion, that's the main thing, that's where they'll go. So that's what I see in the Vedic system, is that at the end of life, one tries to move beyond the passion and try to establish oneself in goodness, simplify the lifestyle, keep it straightforward, so that one maintains the at least minimum, the proper human standard, and if like this. Does that make sense? But as devotees, then naturally there's more, you can go on and go back to Godhead. The demigods, however, act very intelligently to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we see is that the knowledge is the same. The demigods use it to please the Lord. The demons use it to please themselves. That's the only difference. Otherwise, the knowledge is the same. It's the Vedic knowledge, Vedic culture, all these different things. Hiranyakashipu continued. The spirit soul, the living entity, has no death, for he is eternal and inexhaustible. Being freed from material contamination, he can go anywhere in the material or spiritual worlds. He is fully aware and completely different from the material body. But because of being misled by misuse of his slight independence, he is obliged to accept subtle and gross bodies treated by the material energy, created by the material energy, and thus be subjected to so-called material happiness and distress. Therefore, no one should lament for the passing of the spirit soul from the body. Srila Prabhupada elaborates. Right.
Can we say that this proves that Vedanta is all, I mean, the devotees and impersonalists, we all up to the level of Brahman,
are all the same, yeah. Basically, I mean, there's a few little here and there because of their particular paditi, but basically speaking, up to the level of Brahman understanding, then what we're saying, the impersonalists saying, are the same.
That's the proof.
Yeah, like that. And even those who are pious, and understand the Vedic culture, even on the platform of karma, then at least the general understanding and lifestyle will be very similar. Right? It's just because of the other things, they'll do many things that we may not be doing. So our lifestyle and the impersonalists will be more similar, because we won't do all the kamyaka kind of activities. Like nitya and naimittic, that will be done. But the kamyaka, that's where the karmis are engaged, but we don't. Kamyaka means these big yajnas, to ashramedas and things like that. All these different yajnas to get the benefit to elevate yourself to the heavenly planets. Like that. There's certain things you have to do, you know, like Mana was talking about, you know, the five.
The five yagyas would be.
Yes, that you have to do.
That's nitya.
That's nitya and naimittic. You know, like let's say worshiping the Pitris, that's naimittic. It's done once a year.
Occasional.
That's occasional. Yeah, like that. But taking care of guests, it's whenever it happens. That may be occasional. But, you know, generally the respect to the demigods, the respect to the Brahmins, the respect to the what do you call it? The devatas, that's the shastras. All that's done on a daily basis. You're supposed to daily read. You're supposed to daily do your worship. You're supposed to, you know, do your yajnas. All these different things. Does that make sense? So that's common. Then outside that, then you see the karmis will do their own things. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So, and just that the impersonal put more focus on studying the shastras, understanding that. The karmis may, you find some really, really big scholars in the karmi line, like that. Like Shankaracharya wanted to speak to one of them, he was the biggest, and so the idea is if you defeated him, so many smartas would start to follow him. But at the time when he went there, then the person had decided he's going to leave his body, go back to the heavenly planets. He must have been, you know, old, so you know he wanted to go, like that. So as Shankaracharya's coming in and wanting to talk, and the guy just says, "I'm busy now," right? You know, so it's just one of the ways they go is they do their yajna, whatever it is, like that, and then, you know, you level the thing out, and then you have all the ashes. So then they put some, I guess, some ash or something like that, some kind of thing, and then sit in the fire, and then cover themselves up to the neck with ash. So at some point, the heat gets through and kills them, and then they go to the heavenly planets. So he was in the process of doing this. Right? You know, that's what I'm saying. Kami get rid of this. It's a bit over the top, right? So the whole...
That's real occasional.
Once in a lifetime offer. Yeah. So then he says, "I'm busy now," you know, like that. And so he's trying to talk to him, but then, you know, but the guy dies before they can really have a good conversation. So that way our life still will be more close to the impersonalist than these karmis, those who follow Jaina. Like that. Does that make sense? So, basically, because the impersonalists, they cut everything down to the essence, we do the same thing. The only difference will be the impersonalists may be dealing less with material energy, but the principles he's dealing with that less is the same. We may be dealing with a little bit more, but the principles we're dealing with the same.
That's why we're called tyagis?
Yes, that's why we're counted within the tyagis. Like that. But for the karmis are fully into the whole thing, then they have so many rituals that the secondary tends to overwhelm. The idea is the Vedanta keeps the primary as the main, and then you add secondary. How much is your need? Well, for the followers of Jaimini, it's all about the secondary.
Can we say that in our society, if we are too much influenced by karma, sometimes that's what happens.
Yes.
We are overwhelmed by the secondary.
Yeah, we get overwhelmed and we get distracted by them. Okay. So that happens. We get distracted. So that's why then, you know, as time goes and all that, then hopefully one, if it has a good foundation, then at some point one starts to come back to doing things in a more proper fashion. You know, as the desires go down, as one starts to see that actually you can't be happy in the material world. You know, all these things start to, you start to understand, then you can simplify the lifestyle and bring it more back towards the direct devotional activities. You know, maintain only those secondary that are important to maintain, but anything beyond that is not necessary. You know, like, you know, the summers in Rangoon, the luge lessons, all these things, you know, you might start to put on the side as you start to mature. Right? No? Yes. In Vrindavan, there's the famous at Rupa Goswami's Samadhi, Prabhupada gave the, I think it was Nectar Devotion classes. Is that what was there?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I think it was like 10 days, Nectar Devotion.
Radha
Damodar. Yeah. And so then they're sitting out there, because there's that tree out there and stuff like this. So at least that time there was more trees. Then there were less trees, and now there's, you know, some...
asphalt.
Yeah, some building and stuff like that. But they were sitting there, and I think it was in the back. I don't remember who it was, but, you know, two god brothers were there. And then there's this little commotion in the back, and they're all like this, looking, and that Prabhupada says, what's the problem? He says, these birds up there, they're passing stool, you know, like that. And Prabhupada said, even if an elephant passed stool on you, you should be able to focus on, you know, hearing the philosophy. Yeah. Like that. So. Yeah. His point is that
you don't just.
Yeah, you just go like that. You know. Everyone moves over a little bit.
We usually say that it's good cows, they don't fly.
Yes. Oh, that's a, yeah, that's a good saying. Yeah, let alone elephants. Yes, good cow stuff.
Elephants fly. Ayurveda, Kinindra.
Yes, they fly, but he's a heavenly elephant, so I'm sure things work quite nicely.
He won't get by.
Yes, don't worry. Yeah. They have four tusks at once, they fly. If they don't have four tusks, they don't fly. Don't worry. It's a good thing. What do you call it? Good thing. Cows don't fly. It's amazing how each place has its own really unique, really, really, how you say? You know, it really has, you know,
profound
yes. You know, it's based on, you know, centuries of yes.
Experience.
Yeah. Yeah, flying goats wouldn't be so much of a problem, right? Yeah. Yeah, yeah, but the cows, that would be a problem.
Funny that it doesn't have those gaps anymore.
Yeah, I'm sitting here, Prabhupada I. You know, that means like the many Prabhupadas. I don't know. Prabhupada Ila borates. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Did we even start reading this at all? No. Okay. Hiranyakashipu very intelligently described the position of the soul. The soul is never the body, but is always completely different from the body. Being eternal and exhaustible, the soul has no death. So the demons know all this, but it's just that they enjoy the benefits of the body and all relationships connected to the body. But how is it they can go, how do the kshatriyas go out and fight? Because they know they're not the body. How does the karmi, how is he able to do the yajnas and austerities this life and not seeming to gain much enjoyment because he knows he'll get it next life? Right? So that's the whole point, that followers of the Vedic culture, they all have this knowledge, otherwise they can't do what they're doing. It's when you drop down into the pranamoy, that's where the concept of we're not the body and we're the soul, that's where it disappears. Rather than the Vedic, you have to have it. Point is the karmis will remember it less often. The jnanis, more often. But the bhaktas, they're fixed in that. Because they have something substantial. The karmis have, you know, materially something substantial. The jnanis have less, because they have neither so much... The spiritual substance, the material, is less of what it can get. But for the devotees, then, the spiritual is full, and all the relationships, the activities, everything's full. Does that make sense? So it keeps them busy. So that's why bhakti is the easiest. Jnana is technically the hardest. So because it's hard, therefore it's considered advanced. You know, just like reading a medical journal. You know, you can't understand what they're saying. And so they'll figure, yes, we're very advanced. But all they did is say that, you know, the kid has too much mucus in his nose, and he should blow his nose with a napkin?
Handkerchief.
Tissue. Yeah, I was thinking tissue. Yeah. Okay, yeah, you know, that's all they're saying, but they got these fabulous words, you know. So that's all. The jnanis think themselves superior because on one level, knowledge of the soul is superior to the other. But the problem is the method that they're using is so difficult, it's hardly able to be accomplished. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is, but if you value those things, having facility or becoming liberated from material existence, bhakti is the only one that can really do it. So the smarter ones within that apply bhakti within. But then they're not that smart, because if you're using the highest thing to get something lower, that's not really that smart. Yes.
So he knows Atma and he knows Vishnu.
Yes.
But somehow there's no connection in his mind. It's two separate things.
Because it's just Brahman for them. Brahman, there may be some aspects of Paramatma, but it doesn't have the point of the surrender. All it is we're all Brahman. Because you see in here, all it is that. So up to that level of Brahman, it's actually good. But from Brahman on, that's where then that lack will be. Sometimes you may see it in their wording. It's indirectly hinted at, but that's only because of their position of giant Vijay. Otherwise, then yes, that's the thing for the materialist. The highest they can get is basically the Brahman platform, like that. Because even the yogis, technically, even though the problem is Vishnu ultimately is impersonal. So that's the difficulty. They want to merge into the Lord. So even if he has a form, they want to merge. So the relationship is still based on the impersonal platform, even if he is a person.
Mm-hmm.
So the Brahma bodies, he's not a person. For them, he is a person, but the result is the same. So because you've used something higher for something lower, that's not, like that. So that's the difficulty. Okay, being eternal and inexhaustible, the soul has no death. But when the same pure soul desires to enjoy the material world independently, he is placed under the conditions of material nature and must accept a certain type of body and suffer the pains and pleasures thereof. This is also described by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 13:22. Karanam guna sangosya sad asad yoni janmashu. The living entity is born in different families or species of life because of being affected by the modes of material nature. When conditioned by material nature, the living entity must accept a certain type of body, which is offered by nature under the direction of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities, who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. Bhagavad Gita 18:61. The body is just like a machine, and according to the living entity's karma, he is offered a particular type of machine to move here and there under the control of material nature. This continues until he surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Tvam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam taranti te. So technically that means, even though it's very sophisticated and developed and all that, but technically all living entities are, organic cyborgs.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not the body, and the body's a machine. But it's not a mechanical, robot. It's an organic robot. It's controlled by the nature. So it's an interesting concept.
Good start for a movie.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, you could definitely do something really good with that. Problem is, it's the $2 million for the script writer. Okay. The body is just like a machine. Okay, that's what we mentioned. Yeah. Okay. Do we read Mam Eva? Yeah?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Until he surrenders, the conditioned soul is carried from life to life by the arrangement of the material nature. So it's even just by your karma that you've done, how you've used your facilities, the gross and subtle body, then the material nature will give you the next one. And so he's just carried from one to the next. How you do now is what you'll get. Does that make sense? But the thing is we're not seeing how elaborately it all nicely works. But that's what it does. So until we understand we're not the body, at that point then it starts to take on a different thing. Then we understand. Then we can work with it. Is instead of it's just being forced, then you're working within it. So if without Krishna consciousness, then you're working with it will be of a superior nature. You know, the mode of goodness, you get a better facility like that. Only the devotee understands completely how it's just the facility is being given for the living entity to live like this so that he can serve, you know, develop the principle of using body, mind, and words in the Lord's service, which is what they do in the spiritual world. So if you can do that consistently, then you get a spiritual body to which to do that. But if you only do it sometimes and sometimes not, spiritual bodies don't work on sometimes they're Krishna conscious, sometimes they're not. They're always consistent in their service. So when we become consistent, then naturally that's our position. Does that make sense? So that's what we endeavor for. But because it's like any endeavor, it's dependent on the Lord's mercy. So it's not just because I did the work nicely, I became situated, that's why it works. It's because we get the Lord's mercy. That's why then the individual advances in Krishna consciousness and goes back to Godhead. Yes?
Maharaj, is it possible to attain pure goodness, spiritual body, and go back to goodness, mode of goodness?
Go back to mode of, why would you do that? That's like saying when you're a kid, you're in the backyard and you're eating the grass and eating mud. And then once you've tasted all the nice sandesh and rasgullas and all that, then you go back out and start eating mud again.
You mentioned some time ago that there's an example of going up from pure goodness to goodness.
That means us in our conditioned state. We go to the temple, we're in the kirtan, we're absorbed, we're in pure goodness. You know? And then there's a funny noise, and then we look at our phone, and then we, what? And then we get up and walk out, and we drop down into who knows what mode.
Almost.
Yeah, down to Kiwi Goon, right?
It's a nap.
Yes.
You're goon.
You're goon, yeah.
No time.
Person. Gaza Goon.
Yes.
Yeah. Does that make sense? We're talking about that. It's two different things. Once one goes to the spiritual world, one doesn't come back here.
So immediately when we engage ourselves, let's say from a Mangalartik to end of lecture, we are in pure goodness?
Can be. You know? It means if you're sitting out under the tree eating pizza, then you may or may not be.
The difference is then just consciousness.
Yeah, the pizza is not the problem. The problem is Guru Puja is still going on. That's the problem. The pizza is then pure goodness. It's the person eating the pizza you're not sure about. I know as many start to go around the back. You know, so that's. Yes? Okay. Hiranyakashipu continued, because of the movements of the water, the trees on the bank of a river, when reflected on water, seem to move. Similarly, when the eyes move because of some mental derangement, the land appears to move also. In the same way, O my gentle mother, when the mind is agitated by the movement of the modes of material nature, a living entity, although free from all different phases of the subtle and gross bodies, thinks that he has changed from one condition to another. Srila Vaishnava Chakravarti Thakur comments, the Atma absorbed in the body is controlled by the body, is overcome by the qualities of the body. The Atma is pure, but because like the mind, accepting the qualities of the mind. Okay, so we understand, means just that there's these conditions in which things appear as they're not. So in the same way as the living entity being covered by the body, he's controlled by the modes that control the body, so he's seeing things in ways that actually they aren't. You know what I'm saying? Something is so important and this and that, and then, you know, at another time you couldn't care less. Or it's so important to you, but the next person sitting next to you couldn't care less. Like that. So by the modes, affecting our body, therefore we see things as important or not, or this or that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So we're thinking, no, I'm in control. But no, the modes are in control. Just that's the way to get it done.
Yeah. Eternal question.
Then eternal question.
Comes back again and again.
So hopefully we can find you an eternal answer.
Write it down.
Okay.
We all have our conditioned nature.
Yes.
Which will be purified, hopefully, in due course of time by the process.
Yes.
But the nature remains.
Yes.
It's like the preferences, you know, all that stuff. So it remains.
Right.
So what's going to be purified? I mean, we change the we just upgrade our nature to a higher mode with the same flavor.
What is the nature?
The combination of modes.
Okay, but how do you say this? Okay, this is this person.
By the way he acts.
Right. Okay. So how they act and all that. So then, let's say choose a quality of that the action is being expressed through. You know what I'm saying? You don't understand. Okay. Let's say, name an action.
Talking.
Okay. So now, what are qualities that could be connected with talking?
Intelligent.
Okay, intelligent.
Eloquent.
Eloquent.
Knowledgeable.
Polite.
Polite. You know, okay, so these are all there. Now you do have people, let's say, that act not so intelligent. They're not so polite. They're not so eloquent. Right? Does that make sense? So then, but they're talking. Right? Yeah. So now as they become purified, then they'll start to talk like that.
And usually we expect them to stop talking.
This is my avatar.
Yeah, that's my avatar. We expect them to stop talking. Yes. But that's why, yeah. Right? We think they'll stop talking. So in other words, intelligence is there. But so if someone's intelligent when they talk, is there a problem? What's the problem?
Less intelligent.
Less intelligent. So, but it's less what?
Intelligent.
You understand? So in other words, it's a lacking of intelligence. Uncultured means a lack of culture. Do you understand? Is that understanding? So, a lack of culture means there's impurities. Cultured means it's purified. You understand what happens? So, therefore, it just comes across like that. The particular mechanics, the particular other things, those may remain. The person's simple, that will remain. But you see, if you're talking on one level, someone's simple, it's not good. But if you're talking on a purified level, simple is good. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say you have somebody, he's working in the business world, and he's simple. It can be a big problem because he can't know what to do and people will take... But you sometimes have really, really rich people. And if you deal with them as a person, they're quite simple. They're not complicated as a person. You understand? So that's the part that can be purified and is good. Now, the technical skill... That's going to remain. You know what I'm saying? So the one who's a very big businessman, that technique will remain. The person who's not, who can just do something in the office, that will remain. But it's not that by Krishna's grace it can't change, but it's not necessary. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is, as they become purified, so then all of the actions that they do, all the qualities they have, then all become ideal. Right? And that's because they engage in Krishna service. So engage in Krishna service, that's the perfected perfection. Otherwise, if it's just about making a nice guy, that's not going to happen in one lifetime. making a nice guy, you know, from a not nice guy, that takes many, many, many lifetimes, hundreds, thousands, like that. So only devotional service can quickly move one from one to the other. Does that make sense?
Is that because the gap remains?
Which gap?
Between the conditioning and the level of purity.
Yes, hence
because it takes many lifetimes.
No. Hence.
Hence.
Mind the gap. Right.
That's why we're bewildered. Because the person can be very elevated.
But the point is their material ability is not going to change. But it doesn't mean that they won't be successful with that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You know, you have, let's say you have this big, you know, like let's say a leader of a country, you know, or some big guy like that. And as he steps out, then there's all these journalists and this and that, and they're all top. They're the, you know, some of the most intelligent people in the country, most qualified. They're all, you know, Mr. President this, Mr. President that, this one this. Hey, what about that? What about this? And is he looking at them and that? He's got all the guys, you know, their little things in their ears and their sunglasses. They're all just pushing out of the way. Now, what happens if this, you know, let's say this little 5-year-old girl stops them and asks him something? He stops and talks. He might even get down on his knee and talk. So you can say, "Is well, she doesn't have very sophisticated more debt." But the point is, because of just the good qualities and that lacking of bad, you know, kind of development, then it gets work done. So that's the thing: is if one has faith in Krishna, you can get things done, even if you don't have technically the ability. It works because of that purity, but it's not the purity; it's because of Krishna's grace. Right? People appreciate that. It's because Krishna appreciates. So when you've pleased him in these areas, then you're going to please everyone else. You know, therefore devotees could do things that people just you never heard of. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, before, it's like in the 70s and like that. Devotees would just walk into the offices of these immensely rich guys. You can't just walk into their offices. Can't see them, but they just walk in, sit down, talk like this, get them engaged in devotional service. So that's the whole point. It doesn't require material technical skill. One has to be aware of the environment so you know how to deal. But it just requires, when there's Krishna consciousness, there's proper qualities, you know, coming from that in a pure state, then whatever you use, it'll work. There's no one way to get one thing done. There's many ways to get one thing done. Because if there wasn't, where would variety come from? Okay, if there's only one way to cook something, and only one preparation, then yeah, you know. But there's unlimited. So that's the point: is it can all work if you have the proper qualifications, and that means that purity, and that comes from Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? So, yeah. So the simplest person can do great things as they advance in Krishna consciousness. If not, they'll just be able to do what they do. And someone with great material skill doesn't mean that he can actually get things done in Krishna consciousness. You may be a big guy in the material world, but you step into Krishna consciousness, you've stepped into a different world. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Prabhupada adds, although Hiranyakashipu was a great demon, he was not as foolish as the population of the modern world. Hiranyakashipu had clear knowledge of the spirit soul in the subtle and gross bodies. But now we are so degraded that everyone, including the exalted scientists, philosophers, and other leaders, is under the bodily conception of life, which is condemned in the Shastras. So we're saying, oh, we can't, you know, all this philosophy, it's all impractical and all this. By understanding all this and applying it for his material purposes, You know, Hiranyakashipu became the most powerful person in the universe. So it's not that, oh, you can't use this stuff practically. No, you just don't do. Prabhupada said an expert is someone who can take something, how do you say, very difficult, make it look easy. Like that. So that's the whole thing.
Yeah. How is it possible that Hiranyakashipu knew about the existence of the soul, reached to austerity so high level of understanding, and again he was envious of Lord Vishnu?
But what is he envious of? Brahman?
Of Brahman?
Yes.
I don't know.
You don't know. He's talked about the soul in that. Has he ever said that he's envious of that?
No, but he was envious of Lord Vishnu.
Yes. Yeah. And, but can you distinguish between Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan?
Personally, I cannot. I know from the scriptures. I don't have that realization.
We're not talking about realization. Have you heard of the three?
Yes.
Okay. So he's talking about the Brahman platform.
Yes.
Who's got an issue with that? Even atheists don't have an issue with that. You can talk this philosophy to atheists and they'll be cool with it. You understand?
Not at all.
Not at all. The point is this is the Brahman platform. Mm-hmm. Bhagawan's a person. He doesn't like the person.
Okay, understand. How come that...
It's just like this. You have a very rich man. Does anybody have any problem with his money? No. But they might have a problem with him.
Yes.
So that's the same thing. Make sense?
Okay. It's possible. I cannot understand. I'm sorry.
Can't understand. Okay. So then you listen. Continue. Hiranyakashipu continued. In his bewildered state, the living entity, accepting the body and mind to be the self, considers some people to be his kinsmen and others to be outsiders. Because of this misconception, he suffers. Indeed, the accumulation of such concocted material ideas is the cause of suffering and so-called happiness in the material world. Conditioned soul, thus situated, must take birth in different species and work in various types of consciousness, thus creating new bodies. This conditioned material life is called samsara, or samsara, yes. Birth, death, lamentation, foolishness, and anxiety are due to such material considerations. Thus, we sometimes come to a proper understanding and sometimes fall again to a wrong conception of life. In this regard, an example is given from an old history. This involves a discourse between Yamaraj and the friends of a dead person. Please hear it attentively. Okay, so... So he understands all this, but it's not that he doesn't like the position of the experience of the mundane. He's just saying happiness and stress come from all this, but it doesn't mean he doesn't like it. Like we say, yes, you know how you say, the toast comes from a toaster, but it doesn't mean that we don't like toast. Is that what he says? You know, or apples come off an apple tree, so... You know, it doesn't mean we don't like apples, you know. You have the apple tree, there's the apple there, and it grows on the tree, and then, you know, like that, you know, you put water and fertilizer on the root, and then the tree grows, and the apple comes. But does that mean that you don't like apples? Like that. So he understands how it all comes, but it doesn't mean he doesn't like it. You understand? So it's just that because he knows they're not the body and all that, then they don't have to get as much anxiety about things. They can just, you know, dedicate themselves to enjoying themselves. So that's why he's a demon. The demigods with the same knowledge will use it to serve the Lord. In the state known as Ushinara, there was a celebrated king named Suyagya. When the king was killed in battle by his enemies, his kinsmen sat down around the dead body and began to lament the death of their friend. His golden bejeweled armor smashed, his ornaments and garlands fallen from their places, his hair scattered and his eyes lusterless. The slain king lay on the battlefield, his entire body smeared with blood, his heart pierced by the arrows of the enemy. When he died, he had wanted to show his prowess, and thus he had bitten his lips, and his teeth remained in that position.
His beautiful lotus-like face was now black and covered with dust from the battlefield. His arms, with his sword and other weapons, were cut and broken. When the queens of the king of Ushinara saw their husband lying in that position, they began crying. O Lord, now that you have been killed, we have also been killed. Repeating these words again and again, they fell down, pounding the breasts. At the feet of the dead king, as the queens loudly cried, their tears glided down their breasts, becoming reddened by kumkum powder, and they fell on the lotus feet of the husband. Their hair became disarrayed, their ornaments fell, and in that way they evoked sympathy from the hearts of others. The queens began lamenting their husband's death. O Lord, you have been now removed by cruel providence to a state beyond our sight. You had previously sustained the livelihood of the inhabitants of Ushinara, and thus they were happy. But your condition now is the cause of their unhappiness. O King, O hero, you are a very grateful husband and the most sincere friend of us all. How should we exist without you? O hero, wherever you are going, please direct us there so that we may follow in your footsteps and engage again in your service. Let us go along with you. Srila Prabhupada comments. Formerly, a Kshatriya king was generally the husband of many wives. And after the death of the king, especially in the battlefield, all the queens would agree to accept Sahamarana, dying with a husband who was their life. When Pandu Maharaj, the father of the Pandavas, died, his two wives, namely the mother of Yudhishthira, Bhima, and Arjuna, and the mother of Nakula and Sahadev, were both ready to die in the fire with their husband. Later, after a compromise was arranged, Kunti stayed alive to care for the little children, and the other wife, Madri, was allowed to die with her husband. This system was Sahamarana, continuing even in India, even up to the time of British rule. But later it was discouraged, because the attitude of wives gradually changed with the advancement of Kali Yuga. Thus the system of Sahamarana has practically been abolished. Nevertheless, within the past 50 years, I have seen the wife of a medical practitioner voluntarily accept death immediately when her husband died. Both the husband and wife are taken in possession in the mourning cart. Such intense love of a chaste wife for a husband is a special case. Right? So before it was standard, because of just the connection, performance of duties, all this is very nice. So the relationships are very strong. But as time goes in that, then it's not as strong. But as we said here, you know, it's just the nature. People don't have that same commitment. It's not that, good position, but it's just that, what do you call it? Yes, you are a very grateful husband, most sincere friend of us all. So these things adjust with time, and so therefore the relationships adjust and all that. So it can work very nicely. Prabhupada just says this intensity is more rare, like that. And in the Brahminical culture, then generally it's not followed, right? Like that, because they don't have to. They can be recluses, you know, if they're sons and things like that. The others would tend to follow it, because they couldn't necessarily maintain things as nicely like that. So, okay, Hiranyakashipu continued the story. The time was appropriate for the body to be burned, but the queens, not allowing it to be taken away, continued lamenting for the dead body, which they kept on their laps. In the meantime, the sun completed its movements for setting in the west. Srila Prabhupada comments. According to the Vedic system, if a person dies during the daytime, it is customary for his funeral ceremony to be performed before the sun sets, regardless of whether he is burned or buried. And if he dies at night, the funeral must be completed before the next sunrise. Right? So it's there, so then at least before the next. If it's the night, then when the sun comes up, then the arrangement made before that sunrise, it's taken care of. Apparently, the queens continued lamenting for the dead body, the lump of matter, and would not allow it to be taken away for burning. This illustrates the strong grip of illusion among foolish persons who consider the body the self. Women are generally considered less intelligent. Because of ignorance only, the queen's thought of the dead body is her husband, and somehow another thought that if the body were kept, the husband would remain with them. Right. So here we're talking about intelligence, meaning being able to tell the difference between matter and spirit. We're not talking about material
you know, intelligence, how you say, memory, skills, knowledge, that we're not talking about. It's about the ability to tell the difference between matter and spirit. Because guaranteed, any one of these queens could most likely manage as good, if not better, than probably practically anyone on the planet today, who we would consider big, big guys. You know, just their, you know, how you say, you know, the personal, what they're taking care of thousands of people, managing huge things, huge festivals, huge all this, you know. Does that make sense? So they're very good at doing. So most managers today would not be able to keep up with these queens. So that's not what's being talked about. It's about, the point is, the relationship is there, experience is there, but making the difference between whether it's material or spiritual, that's generally the weaknesses there. Right? Does that make sense? But the masculine nature will tend to be able to tell the difference because they work more on the mechanics of it. So in the mechanics of it, you have to be able to tell what's what, but to apply it. But the relationship aspect is more based on the emotion about the experience. So as long as there's an experience, it may not be questioned what it is. Does that make sense? So that's what it's talking about here. Yes.
So how appropriate it is to preach to people in such an emotional condition straight Vedanta?
You can try. Because the point is the soul and all that, because you don't necessarily sit there and say the next sentence. Such a conception of the self is certainly for Gokara, cows and asses. You know, you're just talking about the soul, like this, how he's telling, very poetic. You know, souls come together and this and that, and then they go apart, and so, you know, these things happen. You know, and he talked about how glorious he was doing his service, he was doing his different things, and these things. You know, so in other words, you find out some good about the person, you talk about that aspect, the good qualities, the superior qualities, so you take it out of the lower qualities. His lamentation out of lower qualities. So you bring out the higher qualities in the person, the dealings, the interactions, the standard, whatever like that, and you show how it's just something that comes together, goes apart. You know, so you bring them that. So what's happening is you're experiencing the Brahman platform. Right? So you look for things that give you that experience. You know, it's like, oh, this is so happy, you can do this forever. Like that, because they're experiencing that Brahman aspect, that touching that. But because they don't know what it is, therefore it adjusts. Because everything is connected like that. But they only, their conditioning is only this part I value, so they only see it there.
So how can we reconcile that it is actually Brahman experience, but it appears as if it is very personal?
Because
for them,
yes, because
with this particular person.
Yes, because they're identifying the dead matter as spirit. That's what we're saying here. Mm-hmm. That's where it's being that. They think it's the thing itself is giving you the, you know, saying you're going in the car, you're going really fast, you're getting an experience. We could load you in one of those, you know, cannons at the circus and shoot you out of it, you get the same experience. You know, like that. So it has nothing to do with the car. It's just, you know, that speed, that's Krishna's, that speed, it gives you a feeling like that. So, because all there is Brahman. So what's happening is people are contacting it in various ways by their conditioning, but in illusion, they think it's the dead matter that's causing it. It's the Lord's potency within it that's causing it. Right? Mm-hmm. And you experience that because you actually follow the laws that govern it. Right? So if you follow the laws, then it manifests to it in its natural form. If you don't follow the laws, then it doesn't work. You know? Like I take the key and I start taking it and anywhere on the wall and door, start putting it and turning it. Will it work? No, I have to put it into the keyhole, and it works perfectly. So when that works, the door opens. So when they actually do something right, then it works, and then they get the experience. So that's why it's so, and it's only a moment. That's all it takes. Just a moment, and that whole thing is considered great.
Yeah.
You know, so that's it. Everyone's looking for this moment. So. Spiritual world means those moments are continuous and last eternally. So that's why it says it's so unlimitedly greater. We say, you know, the experience we have here, how great it is and how fabulous it is, it's just a few moments. A moment or a few moments. So if that was going on 24/7, eternally, you can't compare it. That's why it says it's like, you know, the drop compared to the, you know. And we're only experiencing the Brahman level. So that means what's beyond that is even greater. So just like that Brahman compared to here, it seems unlimited. So the Brahman, understand, compared to the bhakti, is unlimited. Because this is just, we're touching eternal, the sat aspect of our nature. So, you know, what happens when we touch the chit and ananda? You know? Does that make sense? And when that's connected to Krishna, then it gives unlimited results.
We have actually seen that sometimes when a cow's calf has died, the milkman cheats the cow by presenting before her the dead body of her calf. Thus the cow, who would not otherwise allow milking, licks the dead body of the calf and allows herself to be milked. This substantiates the description of the Shastra, that a foolish man in the bodily conception of life is like a cow. Not only do foolish men and women consider the body the self, but we have seen that the dead body of a so-called yogi was kept for days by his disciples, who thought that the guru was in samadhi. When decomposition began and a bad smell unfortunately began to overwhelm the yogic power, the disciples allowed the dead body of the so-called yogi to be burned. So this was before when Prabhupada is writing here, like this. So I think even in a more recent time that also happened. Wasn't one of the big Bengali yogis and all that died 5-10 years ago? You don't know?
No.
One of the big guys. And so then, same thing. So he's in samadhi. They wouldn't acknowledge that he died. So, you know, what happened and when they figured it out, I'm not sure, but...
You know. Some symptom must be.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, like that.
And it's interesting, Ramanuja is still in samadhi, Sri Ranga.
Yeah.
He's seeking him.
Yeah, but that's but he doesn't show the symptoms of death.
No.
Yeah. So like that. Yeah. I think another one, just the Madhva, I think it's Raghavendra. They just built the samadhi around him. But he's still in there meditating. Because sometimes, you know, there have been devotees and that have talked to him. Huh. Like that. But otherwise, he's in there just meditating. So, yeah, they do that sometimes. These yogis, then, no. They're just dead.
Because they try.
Yeah, they try. They give it that college try. Yeah, you know, okay. Go for it. Thus, the bodily conception of life is extremely strong amongst foolish persons, okay, who are compared to cows and asses. Nowadays, great scientists are trying to freeze dead bodies so that in the future, these frozen bodies may again be brought to life. The incident narrated by Hiranyakashipu from history must have taken place millions of years ago, because Hiranyakashipu lived millions of years ago and was even then quoting from history. Right? What is that? Yeah, because he was the same. How did he start the story? Oh, in the state known as... Okay, so he didn't start that. But so he's talking about before. Right? Yeah, so. Thus, the incident occurred before Hiranyakashipu's lifetime. But the same ignorance in the bodily concept of life was still prevalent, not only among laymen, but even among scientists who think they would be able to revive frozen corpses. Hiranyakashipu continued. While the queens were lamenting for the dead body of the king, the Lord, their loud cries were heard even from the abode of Yamaraj. Assuming the body of a boy, Yamaraj personally approached the relatives of the dead body and advised them as follows. 36. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Yamaraj personally went, Some say that generally Yama comes personally for pious persons and takes them to a city after their bodies are burned. Some explain that among the women, a few were devotees, so Yamaraj's servants could not approach. Thus, Yamaraj himself came to take the body from them. Yamaraj took the form of a boy because others could not enter such a form, because the child speaking is very sweet, and because a boy speaking philosophy would be astonishing and would inspire them to take up the instructions.
Right? You know, the older, oh, you don't know, or you're this. The kid says, you can't say anything. Right? So you see, is that, you know, some of the acharyas, like, you know, Madhva took sannyas at 6. No, he was 12, Shankaracharya at 6. You know, so then he could, you preached, it had effect. Like that.
Sri Yamaraj said, "Alas, how amazing it is. These persons who are older than me have full experience that hundreds and thousands of living entities have taken birth and died. Thus they should understand that they also are apt to die, yet still they are bewildered. The conditioned soul comes from an unknown place and returns after death to that same unknown place. There is no exception to this rule, which is conducted by material nature. Knowing this, why do they uselessly lament?" Srila Prabhupada comments, "Accepting that there are two classes of philosophers, one believing in the existence of the soul and the other not believing in its existence, there is no cause for lamentation in either case. Non-believers in the existence of the soul are called atheists by followers of Vedic wisdom. Yet even if for argument's sake we accept the atheistic theory, there is still no cause for lamentation. Apart from the separate existence of the soul, the material elements remain unmanifest before creation." So if there's no soul, then it's just dead matter moving around. What does it matter if dead matter transforms again? Right? Does that make sense? You know, you take some stuff and you put it together and then you cook it and then afterwards everybody is very happy, you know, but, you know, it transforms. So why, if it transforms more, what's the problem? So, but if there's a soul, then it's not the body, so there's nothing to lament either. Right then. So that's the point. From either side, it's not, doesn't matter.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
yeah.
Samavet Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema.